Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We've got a special episode for you. This is starting to be, so what I'm trying to do is do our USC versus Notre Dame pregame show. We're still going to do that. I might put that up a little bit later. This is Wednesday. I might put up a little bit later this evening or early Thursday morning. We're going to have Tim O'Malley, who does a great job covering the Fighting Irish for Irish Illustrated. That's the Notre Dame site here on the 24/7 Sports Network. And then I usually answer some of your questions and things like that. I had to get a little curveball this week. So part of that show was going to be talking with former USC tailback DeLon Washington, because it's Notre Dame week. And you know, back in 1996, he was a big reason why USC broke that 13-game unbeaten streak to the Fighting Irish. So we thought we'd have him come in the studio and chat for about 20 minutes or so. Well, it ended up being a lot more than that. It was over an hour. So we're going to do it as its own podcast. Man, he had a lot of interesting things to say. We'll play the entire interview for you coming up here in a couple minutes. But I just wanted to let you know that the plan was it was going to be part of our preview podcast, but he was just too good. Some great stuff. He ended up, you know, graduating, going back to getting his master's. He talks about the recruiting process coming from Texas to USC. Of course, what that win over Notre Dame meant to him and kind of how he set things up in 1995, where he didn't have a great game against Notre Dame and really was able to turn that around in 1996, playing with guys like, you know, Keyshawn Johnson. So there's some really interesting stories from DeLon Washington. He's doing great work in the community, got some great kids. So it's fun. It's a great conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it, talking to DeLon Washington. Before you have any questions or comments for the show in general, you can always email us podcast@uscfootball.com. Or if you'd like to call or text us, the number is 424-254-9141. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. Wherever you find podcasts, you can find the Peristyle Podcast. And, you know, a 5-star rating is always awesome. We love those. Giving some kind of positive review, those are great too. Tell your friends about the Peristyle Podcast. We do appreciate you doing that, helping us share the show. I do want to tell you about another podcast. With USC being 11-point road dogs this week, this game doesn't have the massive buildup around it like maybe some of the other great USC-Notre Dame matchups of the past. The craziest lead-up I've ever experienced for one of these games was that Bush-Push game back in 2005. You guys remember that? That was a crazy week. It almost felt like there was no way the actual game could ever live up to the hype, but man, it did and exceeded it. If you want to relive that game and all the chaos surrounding it, I recommend you listen to the Bush-Push podcast. So they have voice actors portraying players, coaches, and personalities on both sidelines. It's a 6-episode podcast that will take you back to South Bend in 2005 when Pete Carroll's USC juggernaut was riding a 27-game win streak. Now, they were colliding with Charlie Weiss's led Notre Dame team that was in the midst of, quote, returning to glory. The Bush-Push is premiering this week, so make sure you track it down wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, we are going to take a quick break and come back with a full interview with DeLon Washington, one of the stars of that USC-Notre Dame game back in 1996.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Got a very special guest in studio. If you're a USC fan, you've been around a while, a little before the Pete Carroll days, you might remember the name DeLon Washington. He played at USC 1994, 95, 96, 97, won a Rose Bowl, played with guys like Keyshawn Johnson, broke the streak with Notre Dame, the 13-game non-winning streak that USC fans just hated for over a decade. He's a big reason why USC was able to get that win. We want to talk about his career and what's been going on, what he's doing now in his life. Since it's Notre Dame week, it's a big week around USC. So welcome in, DeLon Washington. DeLon, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
Of course. This is probably a little different. It's been a few years since your playing days. It seems like it go by faster.
Yes, it's been quite an experience, man. I mean, just the opportunity to come in and give you guys an outlook of what's going on with me. It's great. I appreciate you.
I'm glad that you could come in. We got to meet for the first time. Sean Canale set it up at the San Gabriel Valley Trojan Club. So we were both speaking up there, but I think we both got shadowed by Dr. Bartner, who did, who kind of took over. I saw him this week at practice. I saw him Tuesday at practice, and I couldn't believe, because we had him on our podcast, me and Dan Weber. We had him on. We went into his office and had him on. It was great. Everybody loved it. And he didn't really like all the focus and attention on him. But then talking to him, he thought it was awesome. Everyone we talked to from the band, they're like, this is great. It was great that you got to expose Dr. Bartner, or not expose, but like show everyone what he's about. And then I get done from my talk, which I didn't think was terrible. And he calls me Mr. Doom and Gloom, and he keeps pointing at me. I mean, you were sitting right next to me. I'm like, what's going on here?
I noticed. I mean, I think he was kind of happy about it, but in a way that it's supposed to be secretive of what we're talking about, kind of personal. But, it's good to see him, see how he's doing. And I'm hating he's leaving in May. So, it was great to see him and also get a chance to hear some of the things that he has going on.
Was that so when we talked to him, it was amazing. I'm sorry, this is like completely off, but since we were talking about him, back in the day, when like Marv Goo like came to him when he first took over and was like, "Hey man, we got to make this the band and the football team like make it. There has to be some synergy there, and they have to work together." Did you feel that when you were a player at USC?
Yes, I've always coming from Texas, a football state. Always want to be a part of a group that's like a brotherhood. So yeah, I felt that way at SC.
Yeah, it's neat the kind of the relationship between the band and it. But anyway, he gave me a lot of crap, and he still gives me crap. So I don't know. Somehow he's like, "That's your new nickname, Doom and Gloom." Like
Doom
thanks.
And Gloom.
Thanks, Dr. Bartner. But he's great. I've really only got to know him this past year more than before. Like run into him every once in a while. But it was kind of cool to see.
Was that the
but.
First time that you guys had a chance to just sit down with him and talk about just his history with SC and the band?
Yeah, when we did the podcast, that was kind of the first time we got really into it. So we went into his office. But then Jake Olson, if you know that name, so Jake and I, for the Fresno State game, we introduced Dr. Bartner at his tailgate at USC. And there's been some other events that we've done stuff with him. But the podcast was great. Like, these are great situations where you can get down and sit, talk to you, talk to whoever.
Right.
And kind of get some more insight into him. So being in his office and seeing all the like cool stuff and have him telling stories was pretty neat. I guess he's out there, but he doesn't really, I guess he doesn't tell his story a lot. So it was nice to kind of get to do that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, when I had a recruiting trip, and I think it was Keith Burns picked me up from the airport, and I've never heard this fight song.
Oh, okay.
So he pops his tape in. I'm like, what is he? Is he going to play some rap music or some R&B? And he turns this fight song. I'm like, what is this? This is the fight song. This is what you're going to be hearing for the next 4 years. So on the day of my recruiting trip here, I got introduced to the fight song. And ever since, I've kind of been like, that's part of my routine. I have my kids listen to it. They like, Dad, is that what you listen to the whole life? I say, yeah. It's part of being a USC Trojan. So
that's a great story. Nice. Well, we want to talk about how you became a USC Trojan. You mentioned coming from Texas, Kimball High School. And now just, I let him know this before, just you know, behind the scenes a little bit. 5,450 yards and 55 touchdowns when he was in high school. Now, this is before like the internet recruiting stuff. But I remember this, you know, I started USCfootball.com in 96, but I remember, you know, even following recruiting before then. 97. And you didn't even realize like you had rushed for that many touchdowns and that many yards in high school.
No, I didn't. Like I was saying, I was focused on football. I mean, again, my brother was a big inspiration for me. He kind of pushed me each and every day for as working out, you know, focusing on, you know, academics and football. It was kind of like he was my coach, my big brother, and my mentor. So it's kind of like you have to do what he says. Yeah. You know, I had a prep talk every morning. I would get either a call or he would come by, drop me off at school. But when I got to my senior year, I was driving myself. So it was get like a call. Hey, man, what's going on? We got game day today. Let's get ready. What's the focus? We need 150 by halftime. So it was kind of like always putting setting goals for me each and every week. And he was kind of like the person that kept tabs of the yards. Like you said, you talked about the 5,500 yards. I'm like, huh? I don't know about that. I didn't even remember all that. So it's kind of he was my stat keeper.
Yeah,
he didn't want me to read the newspaper. Didn't want me to get caught up into all what they're saying in the newspaper. So he kind of kept track of all that. And I appreciate that at the time because a lot of kids used to always did you read the newspaper? I'd be like, no. You had this? No, I didn't. This person over here is in rest for 200 some yards. No, I didn't read it. So.
Well, I mean, you mentioned your brother Benny, and he, you know, maybe if you want to tell the story, but when you were going through the process trying to choose between USC, Colorado, Michigan, he's your coach and he's kind of helping you with this, and just a terrible tragedy happens, and I don't know if that impacted your decision all as well, or how did that all kind of work together?
Well, when the recruiting process started, you know, my parents are. My dad has elementary education. My mother has also like a junior high education. So it was kind of introduced to me by, you know, other people like, hey, you know, take the process seriously. Look at certain things. With my brother Benny, it was like, you know, we're looking at these schools. Let's get a list of what we are looking for. And kind of what we was looking for is like having a minority coach there that you can relate to, a good academic institution, and somewhere where we can play. And we narrowed it down to like USC, Michigan, and Colorado, but we also had others just in case. But we didn't want to stay in Texas, but we took a visit just because we're a Texas native. We took a visit to Texas Tech. And I think Texas Tech was recruiting a lot of guys out of Dallas. And one of the guys was Byron Hanspard, who eventually signed with Texas Tech and had a great career with Texas Tech.
Yeah.
So Benny was like my go-to guy. Each time I came from a visit, you know, what did you like about it? What you didn't like about it? I actually had a cousin that was attending Michigan at the time.
Okay.
That was a receiver, Mercury Hayes. And he was like, he told me the same thing. He said, it's about you. It's not about, you know, having your cousin here. It's not about having your friend here. It's about you. Because when you come here, you have to deal with the situation that you have at hand. So that was great to have him there to kind of showed me, hey, don't come here because of me.
Right. Yeah.
So during the process, I think I took a visit to USC was my first visit. And it was like students was on vacation and everybody like, why are you doing it? Why are kids are on vacation? I was like, yeah, I wanted to get a chance to see what it's like with people not around. I mean, you know, you look at the program, the movie program with Omar Epps and stuff when he went on a recruiting trip and you see all the cheerleaders and all that. And I didn't want that. So when I got here, and like I said, I got picked up from the airport by Keith Burns, who was the defensive back coach at the time, who recruited me.
He was recruiting Texas or something at the
time,
right? Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, he was a real funny guy. Loved him. It was kind of like when I came here, it was like Michael Phillips was actually a former teammate of mine through high school. So he was here. So okay. He actually kind of got a chance to host me, which was great. Got a chance to show me around. And, you know, and I've always had family and friends out here in L.A. growing up. My uncle and I had some cousins from L.A. up north. So I had an opportunity to come out here. I just knew growing up one day I might go to Florida or California. So California was like one of the states that I wanted to, you know, look at trying to move to.
Yeah.
But again, when I came to SC, I wanted to be a computer engineer. And I went to the computer engineer program and had a chance to, you know, see that. And I was like, okay, I can do this. The campus is small. I don't have to walk all over, over here. So that was another thing that I looked at. And also, where can you go in the United States that you can do the mountains and the beach all in one day? So, and I still haven't went to the mountains.
You can see them.
You can see them, exactly.
Back then when we were in school, like I graduated in 93 undergrad and then 95 grad school. So I was around like when you were there too, but you couldn't really see the mountains behind downtown. It was too small.
Smoggy, yeah. Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I had a chance to hang out and I don't know, Prince had a club at the time. Oh, I shouldn't be saying, but Prince had a club at the time. Here and always like, oh, Prince, we got all these celebrities out here. And I wasn't starstruck, but you had a lot of celebrities out here and I can walk around and see. So I said, I think this might be the place. But still, I need to visit other schools and see what happens. So when I came back, we talked about those positive, negative with SC. Talked about different things. And they kept saying, I asked him, I said, well, who is this guy, Mike Garrett?
Yeah.
It almost like he's like, Mike Garrett is the Heisman Trophy, man. I was like, see, I didn't keep up with all that. So,
right.
And then, you know, I had Charles White. I heard the name of Charles White, but didn't nearly get a chance to kind of look at the history. But the only two people that I really knew about was Heisman Trophy winners here at SC was O.J. Simpson and Marcus Allen,
yeah.
So that was kind of like, okay, Marcus Allen. I didn't know the other two, but they kept saying, okay, you have the athletic director is Mike Garrett, and you have your running back coach will be Charles White. I'm like, Charles White.
Yeah.
But got a chance to meet Charles, and it was great. Colorado was great.
Yeah, they had won a championship just a couple years before you were recruited, right?
Yeah, and I had an opportunity to meet, Rashawn Salaam, who eventually won the Heisman there at Colorado, and Lamont Warren, who was also a back at the time that was leaving. And so got a chance to talk with them and, you know, talk to them about the pros and cons. I also had a former teammate from high school that was the linebacker over at Colorado. So it was kind of like getting his side of how Colorado and Boulder, Colorado, not Denver, Colorado, but right. Boulder
beautiful town, beautiful area. Yeah,
great. And I think going into my sophomore year in high school, I had a chance to go to a football camp in Colorado. So that was another thing that I enjoyed the time when I was there as a sophomore. And I said, will I be able to enjoy it going to school there? So it was a great experience, had a great time. And then my last trip was Texas Tech. Texas Tech was had a great time. I had some guys from Texas, from Dallas, my area, that hosted me, and it was a great opportunity to, you know, see how a Texas school was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the time, I think Texas A&M, Texas was on that verge of being on probation. So those are another issues that, you know, you looked at in the recruiting process. A lot of people are like, oh, man, you looked at all that? I said, yeah. I said, I had a brother that kind of kept up with all, you know, recruiting aspects and what things to look at and what things not to look at. So those were some of the things that we looked at also. We had every college to come by, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. Just didn't want to do the Oklahoma State. I think they was doing, you know, recruiting real well in L.A. and also in Dallas at the time. So Texas Tech had a few L.A. guys that was out there that I had a chance to run into and meet. And they like, we love it. You know, it's a different experience that you have coming from L.A. to Texas and stuff. And it's kind of slow. Yeah. That was a key thing about it. But my experience with the recruiting, those three schools were on my list, and Notre Dame was on my list. I found out at Notre Dame that one of the guys told me, he said, man, you have to go to Catholic school. I said, oh, is that right? I'm not Catholic, so I guess I won't go on a visit.
Okay.
So, and those three was on my list. So eventually, I was deciding to make the jump to USC. It was going to be one of those press conference things at school. My brother wanted to set it up and those that they. So one day I had track practice. So we was in the spring for track. And so I was attended practice that day, came home, driving down the street. I didn't even get home that day. I was driving down the main street towards my house, and I have a friend who jumps out in front of me and in front of my car, and I was like, kind of swerved, and I was like, yo, why are you jumping in front of my car? I could have hit you.
Yeah.
And he brings this news out, like, oh, your brother just got shot and killed. So I'm like, man, quit playing. And so as a 17-year-old driving home, just have all this excitement going on, now it's like, this guy is over here talking all this nonsense. So when I got home, no one was home. And it was like, well, nobody's home, so it can't be true.
Yeah.
So eventually I see my dad comes up from work, and he's coming from the back because he parks his trucks. And I kind of remember this from the day from the day it happened. It's like he comes walking up to the front gate. I'm like, you okay? He's like, yeah, why? What's up? I was like, yeah, they just told me that, you know, Benny was shot and killed. And he said the same thing. Quit playing, man.
So he didn't know either.
He didn't know. So my mother was out of town. And we was like, are you serious? And about 6 or 7 minutes later, I see his car across the street. And it's like, oh, there you go right there. So when the car crossed over the street to our house, it wasn't him. It was his friend that was in the car with him. And he's like, we just left the hospital, and he's dead.
Oh, so sorry.
So that night was kind of.
And you were right about to announce your.
Right about to announce it, man.
Like the highest of highs and the lowest.
Yes. So it was like that night was like a lot of people coming by. The only thing that we had, well, my dad and myself, and then my oldest brother, James, we had it. My mother was out of town. That was the issue. Like, how do you tell your mother, who's out of town taking care of some of her relatives, that are some one of her sons?
It's unimaginable.
Yeah. So that night, I talked to Dennis Thurman.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He called, and no other coaches called. KB called, but no other coaches from, you know, Colorado or Michigan. But Dennis Thurman called, hey, how you doing? You know, I'm a Dallas Cowboy, a former Dallas Cowboy, blah, blah, blah. Be coaching at SC. Just want to call and check on you. So I'm doing good. Just, you know, my family, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, I'm not, you know, you don't have to commit to tonight, tomorrow. You take your time, blah, blah, blah. He's like, So that at that time, I was like, you know what? I'm coming to SC to get away from this. So it wasn't just costing him, but it was just cost to get away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I ended up my recruiting. I didn't even have the press conference. So we just basically just signed the papers and came out to SC, man. Yeah.
Do you think that's where Benny wanted you to go?
Yes. Yes. Like I said, the breakdown of not knowing the history. He knew the history. I mean,
he knew who Mike Garrett was.
He knew Mike Garrett was. He knew who Charles White was. You know, he educated me. You know, again, you know, he kind of kept me from the shadows. He kept me in the shadows from knowing all the issues and what people were saying about it. He kept me from that. And I kind of appreciate that because, you know, as a young guy, you get caught up into the lights and the bragging and stuff throughout your city, especially with Dallas, Texas being like a big football city. You know, it was kind of like ambivalent to each day. Like, oh, I didn't read the newspaper, and everybody like, oh, you should. Look, I was like, no, I'm good.
So Benny will handle that.
Yeah, so he'll let me know how many yards I have, and I didn't even pay attention. Oh, you just had 120 yards today. Okay.
Well, he sounds like a great guy. I'm sorry you lost him so young, no problem. But I'm glad. You've turned out great. It sounds like he had a really an amazing influence on you.
I appreciate it. Yeah, man, it was a tragic incident, but you know we kind of moved on, and you know I think he'll be proud of where I'm at right now. He kind of predicted a lot of things. Some things happened, some things didn't.
Yeah,
but that's part of life. And, you know, I'm glad where I'm blessed to be where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up.
It's good to speak about things and know the past and stuff instead of just holding in. So, yeah.
Well, it's good. I mean, good memories of Benny. Yeah, which is great.
Most definitely.
Well, Notre Dame, it's Notre Dame week, and that's kind of why, you know, we're here. I want to talk about your career and stuff a little bit. There, you know, the 96. So it's kind of weird because 95 was a better, I mean, winning the Rose Bowl and stuff is a big deal, beating Northwestern. And, you know, Pat Fitzgerald was the stud linebacker who's now the head coach of Northwestern. So you still have some of those ties.
Yes.
I had some friends because I was a recent college grad at the time. I had a bunch of friends that were like Northwestern grads living out here. They were, you know, working in the entertainment industry.
Yes.
My friend Julie Pleck is like the producer of like the Vampire Diaries, all these things. But, you know, they were big Northwestern people and they were just, you know, peons in the entertainment industry at the time. And a lot of them now are doing, you know, they're big time. But they loved, their team was in there. So I remember that was a huge year for USC. But the Notre Dame thing, like I know maybe if you want to talk about the Notre Dame game that year, some of the disappointments because it kind of set things
one?
Up. Yeah. So, but it was a great – I mean, winning the Rose Bowl is a big deal, you know?
The Rose Bowl was great. You know, last week, you know, we had the alumni dinner with San Gabriel Valley Alumni Club, and I mentioned one – I always tell people I hope it's not the Notre Dame game from 95. That they remember,
yeah.
Because I had a hit where I fumbled, but I tell people that I never got the chance to clamp down on the ball. So if anybody remember that game, a lot of people like when I went home in Dallas, it was like, man, you got hit. Did you were you hurt? Did you feel a certain way? I said no. I mean, they hit the ball, and that's all I can say. But, you know, Notre Dame 96 was a year for not just only me to redeem. I said, we went out there in 95, and we lost, and we should have won that game. But in 96, we had a lot of drama going on. I think a lot of people may not remember that John Robinson at that time, they were in that in the talks of trying to get him out of here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really love John because he came in and got me from Dallas. You know, he could have got someone else from Dallas, Texas, but he came all the way out there and he came to my home and met me in my home. And you know, it was like we had this relationship. So if I wanted to say it like this, I wanted to finish my career with John.
Yeah.
Instead of having another coach come in and, you know, have to deal with. I know some of the guys that came in with John had to finish they were redshirted and then they had to finish with Paul Hackett.
Right.
So, but I was able to finish with him my senior year, so it was great. So I kind of had that going for me on that day. We played Notre Dame in 96. A rivalry with a few guys that I played against in high school. I wanted to beat them.
Yeah.
You know, have that bragging right. And also the tradition that we had in that night, that 13-year tradition that, you know, we wanted to break. And, you know, I shared time the whole year, which was like, it was miserable at times because one game you might get 13 carries, then the next game you get 5 carries.
Yeah. Well, 95 you had over at that, like, 1,100 yards rushing. And 6 touchdowns, and then the numbers weren't as good the other years, but that's when you were more the feature back, right, that year?
Yeah, I guess I was the feature back.
Guess?
Yeah, because you know what, Ryan, I mean, it's like 95, I was supposed to be the third string running back. And if they had this transfer portal that they had back then, maybe I probably would have been in a transfer portal. And I was telling somebody that the other day, because you had Sean Walters, we had Leonard Green, who were Sean was like a red shirt sophomore. Leonard Green was like a junior college transfer that came in. And so sometimes you don't get a chance to talk about what's going on inside. So since I've graduated and no longer have eligibility, I was told that year we came into camp and everybody was going to play fullback in 95, that Rose Bowl year. The 95 year starting, we all came into camp and we was told everybody's going to play fullback and tailback. And so after a week, it's like they say, oh, no, DeLon, we don't want you to play fullback anymore. You're just going to tailback. So I was like, okay, that's a good thing.
Right.
And so each week, and then Sean Walters went from playing fullback and tailback to just tailback, and Leonard Green also. So at the end of camp, I was told that we have guys that are seniors or juniors just trying to get recognized, get a look for the NFL. So you will be the third string running back.
Oh, okay.
Even though you were the best one, we want to let them have their shine. So I was like, okay.
It was kind of political.
It was political. I mean, yeah. And it just to give you, you know, the on look on that. And then Sean Walters had his incident, and then Leonard Green had, I think he broke broke his foot or something. And so that's where it started for me that year. So, again, I like to say I was not the feature back.
At least going into
eventually,
the season.
But eventually,
you became it. Yeah.
I became probably like the second or third game of the season. So, yeah, it was a great season. You know, I had some memorable games. I had a chance to play with Keyshawn 2 years.
Before that had to be fun, right? What was he like?
It was fun. Key was a talker, and I – and it was just like,
you don't say.
It was a talker. So, but you know, it was games that Key was. You could just go hear Key talking to the cornerback over here. And I'm like, Key, leave him alone. You too short, guy. You can't do this. And I'm like, man, just come back to the huddle. But he was great. I mean, great teammate. Outside of the football, he was great. You know, we had a relationship outside. So yeah, it was great. You know, I always tease him when I see him. When I see him, we have this. Where my check at, Key? Because we talked about just, you know, us going to the league and taking care of each other. So
right.
Yeah,
and you played the Cotton Bowl the year before, right? That was Texas Tech. So you must have had a bunch
I was
of friends
able
there.
To play in the Cotton Bowl. You know, I went through that academic challenge with my SAT, my ACT, and I had to retake the test again. While playing and practicing, going to class.
Oh, that's got to be a pain, yeah.
So, we went to the Cotton Bowl. And then sometimes I regret that because I could have redshirted and had an extra year. And I could have been playing with Paul Hackett.
So maybe not a bad idea.
But there
would be a lot of Texas Tech people you knew, right? Because they recruited you and stuff.
Or? Yes. So that was one of the things. It's like a catch 21. You know, it was like, you know, either you play, you lose your year, or you don't play, you get redshirted. So, but it was great. I had a great experience.
So that 95 year, you know, going to the Rose Bowl and stuff, but you had the disappointing game against Notre Dame. And then the following year, obviously some things aren't going well. At the time, USC's 5-6. There was that 48-41 double overtime loss to UCLA in the Rose Bowl. That had to be demoralizing. This is, you know, season not going the way you want. Lou Holtz comes in. You know, it's his last game. They got Ron Paulus,
quarterback.
Denson. Yeah. You guys had Sammy Knight, Brad Auten, you know, Mark Cassano, another Texas guy.
Darrell Russell, George Perry, Will Laurie. We had some great.
A lot of guys, yeah.
Brian Kelly, yeah.
Notre Dame's 8-2 at the time, ranked number 10, and they're trying to get to a New Year's Bowl. And, you know, it's. You know, I think Lou Holtz was 9-0-1 against USC in his career. Things are not looking, you know, it's not good. And 13 years in a row, not having beat Notre Dame. I don't know what the locker room was like before that game, but it couldn't have been, you know, you guys couldn't have been riding high.
I must say it like this, any given Saturday. Yeah. Anything is possible. We was, as we would say at the time, we are hyped. I think they say turned up now, whatever. But we was hyped, and we just felt like we had the better team. We felt we had a better team. I mean, throughout the whole season, we had a better team. We just didn't execute. We made mistakes, and we wasn't consistent. And I'm just taking that not just from me, but it's just we wasn't consistent. There are certain things that I tell people, you know, coaches can prepare you through the week, but you got to go out there as a player and execute. So, we made a lot of mistakes and, you know, some games that we lost that year that we should have won. So, it's still today, you know, games, you know, teams could be ranked and just on that Saturday or now Thursday or Friday night, they can play and just have minor mistakes that can lose the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we just knew we was better than those guys.
So you had confidence. All right. Well, everything I said doesn't sound like there would be a lot of confidence. I know the fans didn't have a lot of confidence.
No, they didn't.
I don't know if anyone did, but you guys did, which is amazing. And then to be down, you know, 8 points late in the game, and that's when you kind of took over. Maybe if you want to kind of explain what was happening up to that point and then what, you know, that sequence was like when you score the touchdown and the 2-point conversion to tie things up and make everyone go crazy.
So you, as a person that's sitting in the stands or watching it on TV, you don't get a chance to hear what's going on the sideline and what's going on the field. I was kind of going into the fourth quarter, it was like Sean Walters and I were sharing time. So he'll have maybe two or three series. I have two or three series. And, you know, everybody say you have the Reggie Bush and the Lindell, the Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah.
It was Sean Walters and DeLon Washington at one time. But looking back, it was a great – plan because you had the Sean Walters who was abused or a finesse type of running back, but he was a big running back.
Yeah. Was he like 225 or how big was, man, you remember, was he?
I think Sean was a little bit bigger than that.
He was bigger than that?
Okay. He was about 230. Yeah, depends on what he ate that day. But yeah, you had Sean who, you know, he come in and he can run through the tackles and, you know, bore that shoulder down and stuff. And myself more a finesse, you know, little bit of scat back. I can go through the tackles here and there and stuff like that. I wasn't a big. I was probably 195.
Okay.
So looking back, I understand what, you know, Mike Riley was trying to do. It was the fourth quarter. Brad Iden returned back from the game, and I think Brad had hurt his spleen or something, and so he returned. And so Brad was like, "Let's do this on this drive and get this game into overtime." And first thing he said, "DeLon, are you okay?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. We can run it." So he's like, "You about to get this ball?" And I was like, "Okay," because I was already upset because it was like taking me out. A lot of people don't understand a running back has to get into rhythm. And sometimes you have a running back that might come out and he's in that rhythm already. But in this game, I was like, I just had a nice couple of runs. Now you're taking me out.
Right.
And I was like, just let me stay in the game and give me the ball. So on the sideline, I was like, just give me the ball, man. Let me get this rhythm going. And so eventually, I guess it clicked like 2 minutes. Mike Riley and John was like, give him the ball and, see what happens. So on those plays, I think we did a couple of counter plays, zone plays, and we rushed down the field and we did a counter. I think that last play was a counter to the right, and I kind of ran up in. No, actually, it was a counter to the left, and I ran up into the that first touchdown was counter left, and I ran off the left side and scored. And, I was like, yeah, y'all should have been giving me this ball the whole game. So, and then a lot of people don't know. I don't know if you know, Ryan, is that I ran from the end zone all the way down to almost the tunnel, like yelling at the fans, like, they should have been giving me the ball the whole game. But it was like an excitement. You know, you get tunnel vision, you're hurting, you're tired, but you dig deep in. Side you and you keep going like I'm tired but I have to do this. And it's like I tell people, like, when you're with a group as a team sport versus an individual, you're doing it individually for yourself.
Yeah.
But when you're on a team and you're playing with a team, you're kind of doing it for everybody, so you don't want to disappoint everyone.
So that makes it 2018, I believe, at the time. Was that right?
It makes it 2018, yes.
Yeah. And then, so you're going crazy. You're telling people, hey, man, I should be getting the ball more. Were you lobbying at this point to also get the 2-point conversion?
I was like, just give me the ball. And I think I ran, like I say, I ran all the way down. And then I see John and I'm like, get back over here. And so they called and said, we're going to go for the 2-point. And I was like, huh? And so, yeah.
Is there a couple minutes left in the game? It was pretty.
It was a couple minutes. And I was like, oh man, we're going to go for this too. And then I think I was caught myself and I was like, I'm tired. And then Brad, and I didn't know the play. You know, I was sitting in the huddle and then Brad Iden comes in and say, hey, DeLon, it's going to you. I was like, I'm thinking to myself, are you serious?
Wait, you just ran?
I just ran all the way down to the field. So. I kind of tiptoed, and if you look at it, I tiptoed into the end zone and was hoping that I made the touchdown. So, yeah, I think I barely got the ball over. So
crossing the line.
It was, and I think I was like, yeah, I'm tired, but yeah, they should have been giving me the ball. But,
yeah. You had confidence going into the game. It looked pretty bleak for a while, but then – once the game is tied, did the sideline change? Like, did you guys know you're going to win at that point?
Or? It did. I mean, you work on all these plays during the week, and now you got to pull the plays that you haven't been using out. So the defense played a great game. That's who kept us in the game again. Like I say, we made a lot of mistakes during the season. Now here's the thing. That you try to come out. We just played UCLA, lost to them in overtime. We should have won that game. It was like we're here. We are at 2018. Now we're at 20. I think it was was it 2020 or was 2018? Because we won that game, what,
27-20.
27-20. So Rodney Sermons came in and scored that last touchdown.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean the defense
that was an
was
overtime
great.
Touchdown.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so the defense was great. I mean, you know, Marcus Sano made a great play.
Yeah, so that was the fourth down. He knocks the ball away. And you know, that's kind of what people remember. And that's why I thought it was great at the dinner that last week that,
you should have been
that
there.
They talked about you because like, you know, you scored those final 8 points to tie the game. But everyone remembers Cassano, like, because it was the final play, knocking Palace's pass away.
Exactly, exactly. But, I mean, you know, I give it to him. Hey, that was, you know, we wouldn't have, he could have, they could have scored, they could have made a pass on that. The receiver could have caught the pass. They could have kicked the field goal. We never know. But, I mean, that was a great play. Sam Knight did a great job during that game also. You know, doing a lot of strips and knocking the ball out, you know. And Allen Rossum, who was their cornerback and kick returner, punt returner, he made some errors where he fumbled the ball and stuff. So they did a great job. I mean, defense wins games.
Yeah.
Defense wins games. And that's pretty much what happened in the 96 with the Notre Dame game.
What was it like afterwards? Because, I mean, you know, all throughout my college career, I went, you know, I was at SC for 6 years, never saw them beat Notre Dame. You know, the UCLA went on a streak too. And so there was some bad stuff going on. So to get that win, I don't know if you felt like, especially with not a great season at the time, like this was a good way to kind of end it. But what was it like, you know, after winning that game?
It was, that night was great. I mean, you know,
I'm sure
we all, you know, hung out and celebrated. But excuse me, the next day was like, you know, where we're at with John Robinson.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, we're going to enjoy this night. We're going to enjoy this game, winning game. But tomorrow we got to see where we're at, you know, if, you know, John Robinson is going to still be here. So eventually he was, you know, Mike Garrett made a decision to keep him for the next year.
Yeah.
We changed offensive coordinators that year.
Mike Riley was out, I think.
And then Hugh Jackson came in. So
he was only there, I think he was there 1 year, right?
He was there probably 2 years.
Oh, did he go 2 years?
I think he was with Paul Hackett.
Oh, he did 1 year, Paul. Okay. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Probably should have done some research. We just, you know, it's early in the morning. We're just sitting down chatting. I'm like trying to remember, like, what did I remember about that year?
Yeah, I kind of remember that because, you know, that year going into the spring for NFL, the NFL trials and all that stuff, Paul was kind of, I don't know if it was Paul, but I think the only guys they really let when they had the pro day at SC, the only guys that they let on the field to work out was like Darrell Russell, Brian Kelly.
Really?
Yeah. See, if people don't know that. I mean, we were kind of the stepchildren out there. When John, they fired John from, you know.
With the answering machine? Like that, like,
yeah, exactly. For what I hear,
Did you guys talk about that? Like,
you know what? I've never talked about that because, you know, I did some, I think it was last year, I did a Notre Dame talk with John at Heritage Hall, but we never talk about, you know, how he, you know, he eventually went to UNLV, so.
Yeah, but it was weird. So if you don't remember, like Mike Garrett, you know, had called John Robinson to fire him and left him a
message.
Message on his answering machine. So.
That's what they say, so.
That was the weird firing until like the tarmac. You know, like so that kind of like, probably John Robinson and Mike Garrett are happy that the tarmac happened because it's not the weirdest firing in
exactly,
coaching history.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I've had my, you know, share of moments with Mike Garrett too. So I had the opportunity.
But so Paul Hackett wasn't letting all of the seniors or all of the run of the pro day.
They locked the gate on us.
What the? That makes no sense.
Yeah, that's what we said. Yeah. You know, we're sitting out here.
That's the whole point of the pro day. Like,
yes, we're sitting out here. We're talking to all the scouts that's out there, and they were like, okay, we would love to see some of you guys practice, you know, work out, and the next thing we know, it's like they only want to see Darrell Russell, Brian Kelly. I was like, oh, okay, all right.
That's
yeah, yeah. So that's my memory of Paul Hackett. and his crew.
Well, there's not like people don't even like USC fans don't even like to mention his name. The funniest quote from him I loved, like, so he lasts 3 years, gets fired, and then Pete Carroll wins the Orange Bowl his second year, and Paul Hackett, I'll paraphrase, but it was something along the lines like, I came in with a 5-year plan, and then won the Rose Bowl in year 5. Like, yeah, that's why. Like, the groundwork you set.
Right.
Why. Now, bringing in Troy Polamalu and Carson Palmer, like, you know, it's USC, but it was not going in that direction with Paul Hackett.
So, yes. Yeah.
And,
I mean,
and stupid stuff like that is the reason why I come in. And I remember he was like the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, so he didn't get in the program until later.
Yes, because
he had to be one of the first things he did was like block you guys from from pro day.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I still remember that. People say, "How are you?" I was like, "Man, I wanted to work out. You know, I had a chance to go to the NFL Combine and work out, but scouts wanted to see us work out, but they was like, no.
Well, we'll talk about your post-USC career in a minute. Well, this has gone way longer than I thought, so I appreciate you spending the time. But the just overall, since it's Notre Dame week for USC fans, from the players' perspective, I love talking to former players about the importance of this game. We used to have Jeff Kopp, the former linebacker. Do you remember him?
Yes,
he was – He was there. A little before your time, I think.
No, right? He was there.
Was he there? Okay.
Yeah, him and Tony Baselli, you know.
Baselli. So Copper was like, he was one of the first like columnists that we had at USCfootball.com. He would do like the Cop Files, and he would write about coming out of the tunnel. You know how passionate he was and everything. But he's kind of inspired me to always, when you talk to former players, get their opinion on the Notre Dame game. So I wanted to kind of get you to talk about what it means to you, you know, then. You know, post-career, now, all of that.
So I came to USC for a reason. I came to USC because of the tradition that I learned over the time from my recruiting all the way until I graduated. Great tradition. We're family, regardless of where we at. If we're in Texas, if we're in Florida, if we're in New York, you have SC family. Notre Dame. You know, I have friends that play for Notre Dame, and you know, you run into them guys, and you like, you know what? We're still bashing your heads in. So it gives us a bragging right, not just only in LA, over the United States, or in overseas. You get a chance to brag about SC beating Notre Dame. So keeping the streak going. Hopefully we can get it done. You may not know, we do have a couple of one Trojan that's coaching over there. So, but like I tell him, I say, hey, I'm on the SC side this game. So,
you have a friend that's coaching at Notre Dame?
Yeah, Delvon Alexander used to play receiver at USC.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
okay.
He's over there coaching the receivers. So, you know, I talk to him time to time. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's a tradition for us. We have to win this game to keep the streak going, to keep the tradition going, to keep the bragging rights going. That's it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well stated. All right. You're still living Southern California now.
Still
you're
here.
Married, kids. Maybe you kind of give an update of what, you know, maybe right after college and then kind of what you're doing now and your reasons why you wanted to stay here in Southern California.
Wow. That's a lot.
Sorry.
No, you're good. No. So I graduated in 98. One of the things that I've kind of been, you know, working with SC, when I graduated, you focus so much on, you know, working out, you know, getting to the next level, to the NFL, and it doesn't work out for you. I think I spent about a year trying to work out for different teams and, you know, CFL, XFL, spring football.
Oh, XFL, yeah.
And, you know, the arena. And some, you know, I had a chance to go over to CFL and play with Stampeders like a couple of games, and you know, they released me because of you know, the numbers game over here. So I just came back to LA and it's like, you know what, I have a daughter out here and I'm gonna stay out here, make sure she has a father. And also, but, you know, a network of SC Trojans are here. So let me figure out what I want to do. That's the thing that I kind of work with some student athletes about, trying to figure out the transition from college sports to, you know, workforce.
Like real world.
Yeah. So it's kind of you focus so much on trying to do one thing. Now you got to switch it over. So I work with a couple of people at the time trying to figure out, like, Mazur Roster. I kind of sat down with him when I came back, and he was like, you know, I think I was bitter at the time when I came back from Canada, and I was trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I got this degree. I don't know what I'm going to do. I started working for some nonprofit organizations, working with at-risk kids. But also I was working, Mazur Roster got me into doing acting and commercials and stuff like that.
Oh, so cool.
I
think that's very cool.
Yeah, you know, you also look at that when you're coming out to LA, you know, the glamour of being a superstar.
I mean, there's a huge tradition of USC football players in Hollywood. I mean, you know, like,
exactly,
there's big names, right? You know, like the Duke and stuff, but, you know, like John Wayne, yeah, but there's been a lot, right? And Alan Graf,
hanging out with him.
Yeah, really. So he runs this kind of organization where they have a lot of, if you need big athletic guys in your movies, there are a lot of former football players.
Exactly.
His son, Derek, one of the great, he used to come to practice when Kevin was, Kevin Graf, like, who's one of the tackles for USC.
Right.
And I've knew Derek from before, but was Derek, he was a little after you?
After me.
Yeah, he was after you. One of my favorite movies, and they're coming. The sequel's coming out actually this week. Zombieland. Derek was the big clown at the, like, when the, I forget the name of the actor,
and he took off on that. And yeah, we've did some stuff with. I did some stuff with him, and I'm like, dude,
oh really?
That's great. Yeah. I mean, Alan, you know, Graf. Like I said, Mazur got me into it. Mazur kind of took me, and he said, man, you know, you got to use your network system with SC. He say, you gave them, you play, you bled, you sweated for them for 4 years. You know, use your network. You know, he said, you can't sit around here and be bitter. It's the reason why you came to school.
Yeah.
Here at SC, because it's a network system and it's a family. So he kind of changed my mind frame when I came back from Canada and was trying to figure out which way to go. So I did the acting thing for maybe 3-4 years. And decided to go back and get my master's in social work. And so from 2004, I actually did a 3-year program. But in the meantime, I actually worked in the USC athletic department.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
The administrative side, yeah. Under Mike Garrett and some of the marketing, corporate sponsorship and stuff like that. So, during that time, I kind of did whatever that was needed to be done. If it's working games, if it's working, doing tours for the Galen Arena.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had a chance to give the Galen family a tour of the Galen Arena before they put the roof on. And I have a funny story. One of the grandkids, I was giving a tour and telling them, this is where the big jumbotron is going to go in the middle. And the floors and da 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 da, and so one of the kids, I hear, is this where our inheritance is going? So
that's awesome,
right? So I was like, wow, inheritance. I wish I had inheritance.
Yeah, that would be nice. I think there's a picture of them. Like, there's probably the whole family picture of them.
Is that so, right?
I think it might be in Tim Tesalone's office. I think it's maybe it's not. I don't know. I thought it was the Galens, but maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a chance to do that, you know, work the basketball, football, some of the baseball. So, you know, just get a chance. We as athletes, all we see is the sports side. We don't get the chance to see it's a business side of how the administration is functioning. And I had an opportunity to do that, you know, interact with some people professionally, you know, besides being a student athlete. So I did that up until 2007, and I had to give some hours back to the LA County. My plan was to only give those a year or two, to LA County, but I'm still there going on 13 years.
13 years, wow.
Yeah, and I currently work with the LA County Department of Mental Health, where we oversee a number of contracts from program development, funding, and budgets and stuff like that. And I also teach at Cal State LA in the social work department part-time. So that's pretty much what I do right now. And the majority of the time, it's the weekends is tied up with kids.
Yeah. You said your nine-year-old plays in baseball.
Plays baseball.
Maybe a little hockey.
Maybe a little hockey. Maybe soccer if he wants to. But yeah, majority of the time it's hockey and baseball. So yeah.
We talked about this offline, but you weren't discouraging him from playing football. Just you'd let him do what he would want.
No, I mean, he's mentioned flag football a few times. You know, and again, you know, people don't know that. Majority of the time, kids are kind of influenced, or I would say the competitiveness of a kid is dealing with friends. So if a friend is playing football or a friend is playing hockey or...
Johnny's playing football. I want to play football.
Exactly. So, you know, I think the flag football was like, hey, one of my friends, Benny, he's playing flag football. I may think about going out there. Okay, well, let me know. You know, so
do
I'm
they
not
know
pushing.
Like you played? Like, do they know like that stuff? Like, I mean, you didn't even know how good you were in high school, but I don't know. Like, do they even know? Like, hey, man, you beat Notre Dame.
Well, my oldest, I have a 23-year-old.
Oh wow! Okay,
she knows.
Okay, well, she was around that
right that time exactly, and she actually was going to grad school computer labs with me too, so she knows, but. My six-year-old, I think she's going to be more a sports, maybe she may be a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
an agent or something, I don't know. But she's more a talkative, like, daddy played football for USC. And like, well, let me show me some of your games there. Now my son, he'd be like, whatever. Like, okay, it was you? Okay, whatever. It's all about me.
Like it's up on YouTube, man.
Right, yeah, exactly. I was like, okay. But he's like, it's all about me, though. So he's, you know, he plays baseball, and I think he does great in baseball. You know, so I hear people be like, oh, he's good. I was like, yeah, he's okay.
Nice.
He's okay. But, yeah. So that's what I'm doing now, you know, and, you know, try to stay connected with USC, you know, talk to some of the administrators over there just to, you know, keep my connections and, you know, just in case maybe one day I want to leave the county and go work at it. SC.
Nice. Yeah, you could do that. You already were there before. But 13 years at the county, crazy. And but, I mean, congrats on all the success. It's amazing.
Well,
you came out, you talked about your parents not having a lot of education going on. Get your degree, getting back and getting your master's. And
I'm not the smartest now, Ryan, but
hey, you know,
it's like,
none of
you
us.
Know, I tell people I'm not the smartest, but you know, if you show me how to do things, we can, I can.
I mean, I think when I got my master's, it was more just like I just graduated and work was paying for it. I was working as an engineer and work would pay for it.
Engineer.
But it was like, yeah, see, you wanted to do that. I started computer engineering. I was electrical engineering. I ended up it, but and yeah, now I do this, which is crazy. But but it was more just like you have to kind of put in the work. Like you might not be the smartest guy in the world, or whatever, but you like there's some people like that's too much work, and so
and see that's what I was told.
Yeah,
it's like do something that you don't have to do too much. You have too much over here. You have practice, then that, you have to go to class.
It would be impossible to do like. Because it was so much work for us as engineers. Like my roommate was like kinesiology major or something, and I worked twice as much as him. But you guys have a full time job.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't have been able to succeed because there's just no time in the there's not enough time in the day. Which I mean, it sucks because I know there's football players that wanted to do some more demanding majors. I think Lawrence Jackson came in here. He talked about that too when he's well after you guys, but you know they directed him to he wanted to be like. Philosophy and there was things that he wanted to do and it was just like that's too much work.
Yeah.
I think Alex Holmes might have done the same thing, but it sucks, but you probably wouldn't have been successful because it's so much time.
Is that what I mean?
I don't know, maybe not. But,
you know, I look at, you know, what's the guy that played for Miami? Was it Miami or Florida State?
Marlon Rolls.
Marlon Rolls.
Yeah, yeah. Our friend Bruce Feldman's like followed his story quite a bit. Yeah, but he's like a Rhodes Scholar or something, right? Like Oxford, or I forget what it was, but something crazy.
Yeah, so
like that.
I don't know if he were deterred to do those undergrad. Maybe graduate school he was able to do it, but I don't know how he. I mean, undergrad you get your prereqs out the way, yeah, and all that. So it's just, you know, you look at stuff and say, hey, what if I would have did this at that time? But, you know, again, my parents, when my mother, when I signed the dotted line to go to USC, my mom told me, she said, these are your new parents now.
that's good advice. Yeah,
kinda... these are your new parents. And pretty much for 4 years, you have to answer to them.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Especially that far, you're that far from home. It's going to be,
yeah,
you're going to have to rely on different, you know, parental figures, obviously, coaches. And
yes. And again, that's why we come back and say, you know, I was looking for a minority coach there that could, and I tell all the kids, I work with some families about recruiting process, just so they can have somebody that looks like them that they can relate to. And it's just part of having somebody to be able to look at and say, hey, this person is here and I'm able to do something, or this person may be able to relate to what I'm going through.
Yeah.
Especially with the transition of leaving home. And it depends on, we talk about single family parents, homes that kids come out of. And you talk about coming from a structured family. A lot of times people who go into the military, you go into the military to get some kind of structure.
Oh, yeah.
You go to college.
You get it in spades.
Exactly. So it's like you going to college. Where is the structure at?
It's different. I mean, even going from like high school where you have like, you start at 8 a.m, you end at 3, and it's like class.
Exactly.
In college, it's like, I'm like, wait. You get to go, like, have an 8 a.m. class, and then I'm not going until 2 or something? Like, what is...
So where is the...
What do you do in between? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talk to, you know, kids and their parents about stuff. The issue I have nowadays is this transfer portal. It's setting the kids up for failure. Me, personally, this is my personal opinion about it. It's setting them up for failure because they don't get a chance to deal with the competitiveness of working things out,
yeah,
with people. You know, you have to go through things to come out on the back end and see how, because life is not going to be fair and you're going to have things that's going to not go your way. And how do you handle them? Do you run away from them? Because it sounds like that's what we're doing now. We have the transfer portal and now... We run away from it. We go over here. If it doesn't work out, do I go to somewhere else to get in the transfer portal? So I don't know how you feel about it. So I know
I mean, I think they got to tweak the rule. I'm always pro player as far as giving opportunities, but
right,
you have to change the rules somehow because there's too many people in the portal with no place to go because there's no initial scholarships left.
Exactly.
And a place like Illinois recruited that, like they left spots open to get people in. And they got 3 USC guys, 2 receivers and
Sydney, right?
They got Trayvon Sydney and Josh Emeterbebe and Oluwole Batiku, and they're all there and doing well. They're all doing well, but they kind of set that up where there's other guys that are in the portal. If you're Justin Fields or Tate Martell or whatever, like you're going to find a spot. But
right,
not everybody's like that. Right. And you got a guy like Akili Ross, who's a former 4-star safety, who was probably going to start for USC, and he ends up going to UTEP, you know? So there's...
It works out for certain people. And, you know, again, I don't know. It's trickled down to the high schools. And, you know,
all people want to transfer in high school.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're setting our kids up for you know, failure and for adversity.
Yeah.
You know, how kids deal with adversity, you know, because I never would have. I'm telling my wife now is like, you know, if my kid goes to one school, that's the school that they're going to finish at. And that's just me.
It's weird, like kind of sheltering, kids a lot. I mean, you know, when I was playing baseball or whatever growing up, if we didn't win, I didn't get a trophy.
You didn't get a trophy.
It's like, that sucks, but like you learn, like, damn, I want that trophy.
So now I'm on off season. I'm gonna work hard to try to get this trophy.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at Reggie Bush last night talk about Chris McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey, yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying how when he first met him, he met him on a vacation and the Caffrey boys was working out. So it's kind of on vacation, it's like they just bred it and breathe, slept, wake up, work out. And that's what they're doing now. I mean, benefit is that your father was a NFL player. You got to go to the training camps and practice and stuff like that. Yeah. You got a chance to see that, but you have to put the work in. And some guys don't want to put the work in.
Yeah. I mean, it helps like having your dad go through it. Like just if you're, you know, like I was the first person in my family to go to college. Like were you as well? Yeah. But
in my immediate family.
Yeah.
To go to college and finish. Yes.
Yeah. And, but if you, you know, sometimes your kids will come in and their parents were professors and they're, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It doesn't mean you can, it's not a huge advantage, but it definitely helps. You know, they know the process, they know all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Where you're kind of tripping through things, you're on your
exactly.
own.
Exactly. You know? I mean, you know, again, the transition, you know, I kind of work with families, work with a couple of people at SC in the social work department on, you know, we're trying to get a, sports and social work curriculum going over there.
Oh, neat. Okay.
And a part of it is because, you know, you have a lot of student athletes. And it's, you know, and it's because I had that experience, that transition from high school to college and then college to the real world, that those guys that don't, or those girls that don't transition into the professional field, now they have to figure out their niche.
Yeah.
You know, what do I do? What am I good at? You know, and it's kind of hard and it's kind of depressing. So, and that's the biggest thing that you run into. You know, we got a free education. I think the kids nowadays are getting a bit more money. I think we was getting $643 a month.
Yeah.
When I was at SC between that 94 and that 96.
Yeah, they get a few grand, I think, or something.
See,
now,
we were,
I believe.
That'd be a few grand. So if I was getting that when I was at SC, it would be great.
It might be more soon. Like might be.
And that's what I was having a conversation last night with some of my students. It's like, when I was there, it's $643. I said, you're getting almost $2,000. And then for those that qualify for Pell Grants, if they're still doing the Pell Grant thing, then that's extra money for them.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, back then we, SC wouldn't buy the book, but, you know, you have schools like Miami that was giving everybody a Pell Grant. So that's the thing that you kind of, you know, look at. And I think we was talking about this last night with one of my coworkers, and she's a former basketball player, and she was like, if they do this, how do they divvy the money up for as a person that is a first or second string player, or those that don't go to the professional sports, those that graduate, those that have injuries later on in life? How do you do, like, for as insurance, medical insurance and things? Same thing that's going on in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these players, they play 3 or 4 years, they get the – you know, retirement, but the medical part is what you're talking about when you talk about the NFL. So those are the things that you look at, you know, about money, them taking money and eating, and I think they get education. Everybody always say free education. They get a free education out of it, so they should be happy.
Yeah, a little more than that.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that's what the people I used to hear people, they say, oh, they don't need to get paid because they get a free education. I said, yeah, but you know, people have to live, and you know, you have junior college players that come in that, and when we're just talking about football, I'm not talking about tennis, and it depends on who's bringing money in. You have Alabama, who have all these sports, But Alabama football is bringing the majority of the money in at their school. So they're paying for pretty much all the other sports. And then you have certain programs like Duke, whose basketball team is pretty much. And then now the football team is doing well.
They're doing pretty good,
So it's extra money. Then you go over to Notre Dame this week, who has they're independent. But with basketball, they're with the big
ACC.
Yeah. So they have to figure. I say it's a lot of things going into that because you have ACC TV money, and they're independent in football. So it's a lot of things that you have to look at when you start talking about paying the student athletes.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of things.
That NBC contract's pretty good for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I thought this was going to be about 20 minutes, and we were an hour and 10 or so. So man, I do appreciate your
time. I appreciate it, man.
No, this has been awesome. I want to definitely have you on again. It's always great to see former players, especially players that had a significant role in USC football history like you had, but then, doing great things afterwards and what you've, working for the county for 13 years. So we appreciate that.
And, my pleasure.
I'm sure the fans are going to love to hear it. So the whole plan, this was going to be part of a Notre Dame preview podcast, but this is way too long. So this is going to be its own. So I'll do an introduction at the beginning. So, So this will be its own. We'll have our DeLon Washington podcast.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I mean, it's always good to come out and just, talk about my experience. I mean, it's good.
It was great. We'd love to have you on again. If you're checking the team out, we'll get your kind of thoughts on going on there. There could be some similar things with, there's always weird stuff going on. It's USC.
Yeah, we got some good players.
All right. Is there any social media stuff you want people to follow you on or anything? Or?
No, I'm not too much. I'm still kind of learning.
We'll get you on Twitter. We'll get you on one of those.
Oh, Twitter. Okay.
We'll get you doing that. Yeah, tweeting some stuff. All right. DeLon Washington, thanks so much for coming in studio.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
All right. And everyone else, I hope you enjoyed that. It was a great conversation with former Trojan tailback DeLon Washington. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. We'll do a Notre Dame preview podcast, but we're going to do that separately now because this one was too long and it was too good. So this is going to be a standalone now. So thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.